This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Do you think politicians are spending too much of your money on fun times? Nice dinners, travel, events? What if it all fits within the rules, though? And who made the rules? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're talking politicians' expenses. We've got Senator David Pocock on to talk about what he thinks of it all, because there's a lot of scrutiny on Sport Minister Annika Wells' spending this week. Also, coming up later, Big Brother. It's wrapped up for the year. Spoilers ahead. If you don't want any spoilers, make sure you tune out for that one. We're going to speak with one of the housemates, Abiola.
I remember being little and never seeing anyone that kind of like moved the way that I did, you know? So I hope that they can see that, you know, anyone can be on TV.
Yeah, that chat is coming up soon. We're also talking Ket sticks. What are they? We're going to get right into it all. First, though, Hack.
Let's talk social media, Ben.
I think they should be removing the harmful content instead of removing us.
On Triple J.
Yeah, just a few hours to go until this world-first social media ban is officially underway. Under 16s, banned from 10 of the biggest platforms. TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, among those who are forced to block more than a million accounts. Is it going to work? What do you think of it? Are you impacted by it, or you know someone who is? 0439 757 555. We've got Senator David Pocock on in a bit to get his take, but first, Katie McAllister's been speaking to some of the young Australians who are bracing for this ban.
Yeah, most people are just putting on their stories like, you know, send me a number if you want to keep in contact.
I think we're going to start like a WhatsApp or something, or like use some other app that isn't getting affected by the ban.
If you know anyone under 16 today, you know it's a big day, with a lot of their favourite apps, chats, streams and forums about to go dark.
And saving any really important stuff on social media, so whether that's stuff on TikTok, yeah, Snapchat, just saving any memories that I want to keep.
Some friend groups are getting creative.
So we kind of just have like this massive Word document. You'll invite people into it. You'll all just sort of chat on there. Like you'll have different highlighter colours for who's saying what.
While others are focused on loopholes.
Well, if I want to keep my job, I'm going to have to try to find a way around it. My mate, he come up with using his parents' ID.
Whether that works will start to become clear in the morning.
Australia is moving to ban anyone under 16 from using social media, calling it a world-leading reform to protect children from harmful content online.
Australia's social media ban law passed Parliament a year ago, and enforcement starts tomorrow.
And this one's for the mums and dads. Social media is doing harm to our kids, and I'm calling time on it.
Championed by Labor, the ban's been backed by most of the opposition too.
The onus will be on social media platforms to demonstrate they are taking reasonable steps to prevent access. The onus won't be on parents or young people.
The eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman-Grant, is in charge of the ban and reckons the world is watching.
And while we may be among the first, I'm confident we won't be the last.
She's vowing to go after social media platforms that still let minors online. So, who's covered? Well, as of now, the ban covers TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, Threads and Reddit, as well as Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, X and Kick. That leaves out platforms like WhatsApp, Messenger, Discord and Roblox. But the government's also saying the list is dynamic, with other apps potentially added down the track.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me on how you're able to fly a plane at 15, but yet you can't use an app.
So what are Aussies under 16 reckon?
I got it when I was 13, and geez, that was the life changer.
Riley's 15 and lives in Woodna in South Australia.
In a rural area, but we might have 50Ks between me and my mates, and it's not a real simple quick walk down the road. For us out there, it's our really main form of connection.
Willow's also 15 and lives in Albany in WA. For her, the ban could be a good move and possibly keep teenagers safe.
It's so simple and easy to make social media accounts where you can lie about who you are and you can make up fake personas so easily. and chat to people that and that you could have ill intent about.
In Adelaide, 13-year-old Finlay is planning an analogue summer.
Me and a few of my friends have been talking about like catching up at the mall and stuff, going to the park, stuff like that, especially with the holidays coming up.
He's seeing the benefits of forced time offline.
It can really sort of disconnect you from the people around you and your self-esteem can get really, really low.
But back in Woodna, Riley's got the opposite worry.
I've got so many mates that have gone and made friends on social media because they didn't feel like they could have other friends in real life.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Katie McAllister reporting there. A lot of messages coming through. Thoughts on this social media ban for under 16. Someone says this ban could not have come sooner. Another person, I work as a high school teacher in Brunswick. Students I spoke to today said I actually can't wait. Okay, interesting. And another person says, we have to stand against this. I think it's control under the guise of safety. Well, look, to talk about the social media ban and some of the other big stories in politics this week, like politicians' expenses, Independent Senator David Pocock is with me now. G'day, Senator. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Dave.
Winding down for the year, how are you feeling at the end of a big parliamentary year?
Pretty stuffed. You know, it feels like it's flown by, but it's also been a huge year and you know, I think like most Australians, really hanging out for a bit of a break.
Yeah, winding down, but then one of the biggest stories to hit politically this year is this social media ban, world first ban, which is coming into effect in just hours. How do you feel about it?
Oh, I've got had a bit of a nuanced view when this came down to a vote. I actually voted against the bill in the end when it came to the Senate because I was really concerned about just how rushed it was. There was no consultation, particularly with young people, and it just felt like a bit of a political fix rather than actually really dealing with the issue in a more wholesome way. I do think that we need to be ensuring that young Australians can actually have a childhood and not just sort of be spending all their time on their phones and on social media. Sure, an under 16s ban may be part of that, but I think on top of that, we've got to be looking at a digital duty of care to actually make sure these platforms are cleaning up some of the junk on there.
So your criticism here is that in many ways it doesn't go far enough. Would that be fair to say?
My criticism is that it was an awful way to legislate. Like, it was super rushed. There was basically no consultation, no scrutiny, no debate about, well, what is the best way to do this? Should we be looking at this kind of facial recognition? Should we be looking at it at a device level where your actual phone has your age in it? None of that happened. So this was rushed through by both the major parties because they wanted some sort of win to sell to parents. I think that's a bad way to be making laws, but I do support efforts to actually ensure that we're creating safer spaces online. And again, like standing up to these multi-billion dollar companies that just suck up so much of our attention and clearly are harmful.
All right, so I want to ask you about another big issue this week that's getting a lot of attention, expenses of politicians. I've got to ask you, have you claimed any expensive dinners lately?
Well, Dave, this is a debate I tread very carefully into because I'm a Canberra-based politician. I'm a senator for the ACT. And so I think in the last parliament, I was the lowest spending politician in parliament. Because I don't have to travel a lot. You know, I go away for the odd committee
hearings.
It's
pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious if you're spending quite a bit on travel and that kind of thing.
There'd be some serious questions to answer, wouldn't there? I think we have to ensure that we have a parliament that, you know, has rules in place where people can actually see their family, that there are sort of potentially allowances for that. But do politicians need to be flying business class on a 2-hour flight? I certainly don't think so. Should we be flying partners business class to watch the cricket for a day? No. You know, just because something is within the rules, which, you know, let's be honest, these rules were created by politicians in parliament, just because they're within those pretty generous loose rules at times doesn't mean they're okay. But I do think we're focusing on this. You know, yes, this stuff matters because I think it's an indication of how people view and spend public money. But at the same time, I haven't seen the same sort of focus on the tens of billions of dollars of gas that we give away for free. And
I want to stick on the expenses for a second because there would be people thinking, well, is he putting his money where his mouth is? Like stuff like that, if you're talking about a couple of hours flight and traveling business class, is that something that you would do?
No, I spent, I don't know, 15 years traveling in rugby teams, usually wedged between two absolute giant humans in economy. Like, I just do not see the need to travel business class within Australia. You know, sure, some MPs who are maybe coming from WA or far north Queensland, there's potentially an argument that they want to arrive in Canberra fresh. But for the rest of us, I just don't think that cuts it.
There are a lot of people out there who think that maybe Sports Minister Annika Wells is copping too much heat just because, you know, she wasn't spending the most when it came to these cars that politicians get to use, or when it came to international travel, she was pretty far down the list. What do you think? Do you think personally she's copping too much?
Well, it's an interesting one. You know, it seems to be in politics once one of these stories breaks, then there's a whole bunch of follow-ups and, you know, who knows where this is coming from. But as you said, I think she's sort of the mid-30s for spending and using these sort of entitlements, as they call them, which, you know, that's probably worrying if you look at some of the spending. But yeah, maybe it is. You know, she's a mum with young kids, and I think there are legitimate reasons for her to be wanting her to see her family on the weekends. I think she's earning $440,000, so she could potentially afford to fly them in herself. So, I mean, you know, that's also something we should probably be having a conversation about as politicians. So most Australians dig into their own pocket.
So should politicians pay it back? Like, if they're in a situation like this, do you think they should say, hey, okay, maybe it doesn't suit expectations, doesn't pass the pub test, as people say, here's the money?
Well, we've seen that happen in the past. I would hope that we have rules and guidelines that are actually in line with community expectations. Yeah, I think the longer you're in politics, I think the more important it is to sort of stay grounded and connected to the people that you are serving. And, you know, you can see why this resonates so much, Dave, when you look around the country and so many Australians are genuinely looking at the prospect of buying Christmas presents for their loved ones with a real sense of dread of, well, where's this money going to come from? What's Christmas going to look like for me? And then they see that politicians are blowing thousands of dollars on business class flights to, you know, watch the cricket or whatever it might be, you know, fancy dinner in Paris. Yeah, I think that does damage trust and confidence in politicians at a time where we desperately need to be rebuilding that trust.
Yeah, we are hearing from a lot of people on the text line. Someone says, if rules have not been broken, the rules need to change. MPs are living on another planet, spending our money as though we're not in a cost of living crisis. I should say, Minister Wells has asked the Independent Parliamentary Expenses Authority to conduct an audit of her travel expenses. That news came through this afternoon. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, speaking with Independent Senator for the ACT, David Pocock, about politicians' expenses, social media ban, a bunch of other political stories. Senator, just finally, something we've been speaking a lot about on Hack this year is gambling. We're wrapping up another year without seeing any movement from the government on reform, although there is talk that the government is going to abandon plans for a total ban on gambling ads. How do you feel about that?
I think it's disgraceful. This is something that the last two parliaments have failed to deal with. We've got a government that clearly has a problem with vested interests when it comes to gambling reform. We have the Murphy Report, which I honestly think is parliament at its best. You saw the work they did as a committee, and then they handed down a unanimous report saying gambling is a public health issue in Australia, and this is how we deal with it. We live in a country where, for young people, gambling has become so normalised that 75% of them think that gambling is just a normal part of enjoying sport. And we are potentially ruining sports for young people in this country. And rather than embracing that, saying, okay, let's get to work, let's do this, we've seen a prime minister and a government that has just sat on the report, hasn't really done anything. They've implemented a few recommendations from reports that happened under the coalition government, but nothing from the Murphy Report. Allow people to have a punt if they want to, but stop normalising gambling in Australia, where we're the biggest losers in the world.
Are you worried nothing's going to happen?
I am concerned, but I think there's more and more recognition in the community and pressure from the community to actually deliver on this. I think anything short than a full ban on all gambling advertising will be a betrayal, not just of, you know, the late Peter Murphy's legacy, but of all Australians, because the vast majority of Australians want gambling ads banned.
All right. Independent Senator David Pocock, pretty lonely kicking around Canberra without all his colleagues at the moment. Thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
And
cheers.
We've got a lot of messages coming through on Hack's Instagram on politicians' expenditure. Someone says, I'm all for the reunion rules. Often enough, these politicians are working hard, long hours, and you know, they're away from their family. I'm sure most would appreciate their employer supporting family work-life balance. Someone else, though, says there should be removal of family reunion spending and the inclusion of the pub test guidelines or rule. Look, Hack did ask to speak with Minister Annika Wells. She wasn't available. We also have asked to speak with the Prime Minister this week and throughout the year. He also wasn't available to speak with us.
Hack. They're using the walking stick as a mobility aid because they're getting a bit too dull, specifically on ketamine.
On Triple J.
Yeah, there's a new trend emerging at festivals. I don't know if you've noticed it. Maybe you're into it. Walking sticks. Have you been to a festival or a rave lately and noticed these? Because while people with disability, mobility issues might need canes, a lot of other people are using them for very different reasons. April McLennan's been speaking to some festival goers about it.
Outside the festival toilets, Remy gets chatting to a guy with a walking stick.
If you don't mind me asking, why do you have a walking stick?
The man responds.
It matches my hat. I can whack my friends in the bum with it, and it helps me when I'm gacked.
It's something the 27-year-old reckons she's seeing more and more.
I've noticed this, like, surgence of young men using walking sticks at festivals. It's an actual, with a handle, walking aid that they have. Or I've seen some people even have, you know, like, the walker? I saw a couple of walking frames too.
The reason?
They're using a mobility aid to help with the ketamine legs.
Walking sticks at festivals can be really useful. Kind of consider them kind of like doof sticks, but a little bit more versatile. You can decorate them with how you'd like to.
One of the non-disabled people using a walking stick at festivals is 27-year-old Jai.
And plus, when you're at big festivals like Pitch, Strawberry, BTV, you know, you're doing up to 30, 40,000 steps a day. So that's a really good reason to have them. Gives your legs a decent break.
But like Remy mentioned, there's another key reason he's using the cane.
You know, when you are on the pony powder, your legs can get a little bit jelly. So it's always good to have something to lean on instead of one of your friends.
This is all happening as ketamine use in Australia gets to a new record. The drug is legally used as pain relief in hospitals, to treat severe forms of depression, and famously by vets to sedate large animals like horses. It's illegal to use to get high, and it comes with risks, including to the bladder and kidneys. And then there's the risk of a full dissociative break, the K-hole, which can last for hours.
Okay, I like to party too, doesn't everybody, but you're clearly pushing your body so far to this point where you can barely stand up. Like, maybe that's something to think about.
I would really love if I could have both hands up in the mosh and dancing, you know, but I can't.
For music lover Inez, using a cane isn't a choice.
I've got to have one hand down on the stick, otherwise I'm falling over.
Inez is in her 20s and lives with a disability. She uses a cane for mobility.
I love music and I love festivals, and for a long time, like, they weren't places that I was able to go because they just were so inaccessible.
She reckons while festival accessibility has improved, she's worried this ket stick trend could set things back.
When organisers see that people are kind of, you know, faking disability or, you know, using these support aids when they don't need them, it's going to really delegitimise the people that do. It's going to delegitimise anyone who actually is a cane user in those spaces. You know, it's going to be harder for them to access the things they really need.
While Inez doesn't want to ruin the vibe, she's asking people to be a bit more thoughtful.
If you're going to have a stick that you want to dress up as like a rave stick or something like that, as long as it doesn't look like an access tool. And if people aren't faking the use of those tools as access tools, you know, then I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Maybe just take less ketamine and they won't need it.
Well, hey, that's up to you, but maybe find another way to support your K-hole, you know? If there's another way to support it, or even have a really long stick that doesn't look like a mobility aid, I'd be all for it.
Bring back the doof sticks. I guess they never left.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, ket stick in or out for this festival season? Jai and Remy have opposing views.
I know a lot of people kind of frown upon them, as I've seen online, but I don't really understand why they would when, like I said, they are super useful.
I think ket stick out, like, get a grip. Party within reason, take care of your body. I don't know, like, drink some coconut water. Like, why do we need the ket stick?
Hack on Triple J. April McLennan reporting there. A lot of interesting takes on Ket Sticks. We're going to move on, though, now and talk about Big Brother. And a spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the grand finale, tune out now. We're giving everything away. There are spoilers. All right, let's go.
Hack.
My Big Brother experience in three words was crazy, unexpected, freaking sick.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's often called the ultimate social experiment. A bunch of people from different backgrounds, ages, chucked together in a house, cut off from the outside world with cameras, microphones, monitoring their every move. Big Brother returned in a big way to Australia this year. And it wrapped up last night, the winner being Coco. And this season had a lot of eyeballs on the TikTok live stream, socials content around the world. People were consuming this stuff. So let's speak to someone who was part of it. Abiola, 24 years old, introduced herself on day one as a fat black lesbian and was at the centre of some of the big conversations in the house. She made a lot of fans around the country for being down to earth, and I'm so happy to say she's with us now to chat. A language warning on this one, though, because we are using adult language here. Abiola from Big Brother, welcome to Hack.
Yo, thank you for having me.
It's all over. How does it feel today knowing that the chapter's closed on this Big Brother experience, not just for you but for everyone? It's all finished.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, honestly. Like, it still feels so surreal, and it's like I would go back there in a heartbeat. So it's kind of sad knowing that it's all over now and there's no going back now.
Yeah, they shut the doors.
Yeah, legit.
No one's getting inside. That was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you. Mm. Is it something you would consider doing again? But it sounds like you loved it. 100%.
100%. Honestly, like, when are you ever going to be in a situation without going on your phone for that long and, like, kind of detoxing from, like, the world? Like, what, we're just not going on our phones for a month? We're not watching TV? We're not listening to music? Like, who does that in this day and age? It's sick.
How was that? Like, did it take a bit of an adjustment to get used to it first? Like, do you think when you were all starting out in that first week that everyone was getting used to that technology detox?
Yeah, 100%. I think it took, you know, like a solid week or so. Like, Alana, she would do this thing that would help piss me off, where she'd be like, oh, do you want to watch a movie? Or do you want to, like, she just keep, like, clowning me, being like, oh, yeah, let me go Google this real quick. And I'd be like, oh, yeah. And then she'd be like, nah, bro, we ain't got our phones. I was like, that's not funny, bro. So it definitely took a minute to adjust to it, but it wasn't like it was hard. It was more like the things that was the hardest, not being able to Google things, like, you know, having a debate about something, being like, no, this person's born in this year. And you can't even Google it, bro. Like, you can't even, like, confirm who's correct or not. Would be like, Big Brother, like, what is it? Bro wouldn't say anything. And it was like, okay, I guess we'll never know then.
Before we get into, like, your experience in the Big Brother house, I've got to ask you, what did you think of the finale last night? Like, it was pretty nail-biting. Coco won.
Yeah.
Do you think Australia made the right decision?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they did make the right decision. Like, she's a single mom. She deserves the money. You know what I mean? Like, it's that simple. I personally wanted, like, either Alana or Connor to win, but I'm very happy that Coco won because, yeah, she's a mom, and I know that money will go to very good use.
How hard has it been adjusting to normal life since you've been out of the house in this week? Has it been really difficult, or has it been a fun experience jumping back into the real world?
Look, it's been a little bit random. Like, I still find myself when I be talking about some kind of, you know, saucy conversations in terms of, like, a little bit, you know, a bit of tea or something, I look up to see if a camera's looking at me. Like, I feel like I'm still being watched. I have situations where I'm laying down and I think I'm lying on my microphone and stuff.
Can I ask you what made you want to do Big Brother in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I was literally at, like, a hair salon. There was a bunch of people there and they were like, you'd be so good on Big Brother. And I was like, not going to lie, guys, is Big Brother, like, still going? Like, is that a thing? And then I'm, like, walking home and I get a suggested ad on Facebook. And I was like, bruh, like, if Big Brother ain't watching me, like, you know what I mean? It sounds like it's meant to be. So I just applied and I honestly didn't think I was going to, like, get it. And I know that everyone says that, but it's like you really think, like, nah, this is just... And then I got it and I was like, crazy. All right, fair enough. Let's do it.
You were at the centre of some really big conversations in the house. One of those that people might remember was a big group discussion, mm-hmm. and it was you and Holly talking about pretty privilege.
Yeah.
And she said that she didn't really believe in it and that, yep. you know, people who are pretty feel very anxious too. And you kind of shot back and said, well, you'd rather that than people think that you're gross and not yep. want to give you the time of day. How were you feeling in that moment? What was going through your head?
I mean, I was pretty, like, overwhelmed because, like, I'd only only known these people for like 3 days, three, 4 days, whatever. I hate crying in front of people, but like I can't help but cry when I'm overwhelmed. So that was why I was crying, because I was just so overwhelmed. But I felt very stressed out because there was a lot of eyes on me when I was talking, but like a lot of support as well, like from Coco, Alana, Mia, all that, which was amazing to have. But yeah, I was just definitely overwhelmed because I probably wouldn't be put in that situation in real life. You know what I mean? Like where I'm having this debate in front of like 12 people I don't know very well, you know?
Did you feel like you were speaking for other people? Like in that moment when you know the country's watching, you're having this discussion, you're speaking with someone from a very different life experience than yourself. Do you feel this obligation, I guess, to back yourself up and to speak for other people?
100%. Like it's not like about speaking for other people, but it's about speaking about my experience that other people might have had as well. And I know that like speaking to other plus size like women, like they have had similar experiences. So I thought it was very important in that moment to talk about my experience as much as I maybe didn't want to get that deep. It was important to do it because it's like, that's why we're on the show. We all represent different people in Australia, you know what I mean? It is cool to think that maybe like some people see you and they go, oh my God, like, you know, the whole idea of when you're a kid and, you know, you don't see who looks like you on TV. So like, it is really nice to think that maybe if there was like some young girls who look up to me being like a black woman, a queer black woman, and seeing me on TV, and especially masculine, like little girls, you know what I mean? Like I remember being little and never seeing anyone that kind of like moved the way that I did, you know? So I hope that, you know, they can see that, you know, anyone can be on TV, you know, as cliche as it sounds.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Abiola from Big Brother about her time on the show. It wrapped up last night. People on the text line, some people saying, why didn't you give more spoiler alerts? I gave three and the show finished last night, so all good. Abiola, you went to some really deep places on the show. Like you talked about your mum who passed away years ago. Was it hard opening up about such private parts of your life knowing that Australia was watching?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't about Australia watching. It was more just like opening up to people about it because I kind of speak in this very nonchalant way about it when I don't really want to talk about it. That's quite like, yeah, yeah, you know, my mum died. Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? And so that was probably the hardest part, not necessarily it being on TV.
When you decided to leave the house, Abiola, you had seconds to decide whether you were going to take this offer of $15,000.
So rogue.
It was so, like, it was intense to watch it in real time. You decided that you would, and you decided for two main things, really. Yep. You needed to go to the dentist.
Yeah.
You needed money for that, and you need to get your car fixed or to get the rego done.
Well, I need to get it serviced.
Serviced.
Yeah.
Was it a hard decision?
I'm going to just say no, because it's like, you know, when you make those decisions, like it's not even your brain working, it's just your body goes and does it. That was kind of like, that's what that was. It was like, there was really no thought to it, except for the fact that I was like, there's only a week left. If I've been given this opportunity now where, you know, I can do the things that I've spoken about with everyone in the house that I want to do, like going to the dentist, going to the mechanic, all that stuff. I need to stand by my word and do it. I think I regretted it the 20 minutes, you know, after it happened, because I could like hear everyone in the house and I had such FOMO. And then I was like, nah, I'm so grateful that like now I can do the things that I need to do.
There would be people listening who are thinking it's pretty messed up that you've got to go on reality TV show to try and win some money to afford some basic things in life, like going to the dentist.
That was not my intention. Like I wasn't like, I'm going to go on this show so I can, you know, win money and go to the dentist. Like when you apply and you hear about winning, you're like, you think of like the way bigger things. But then when I was in the house, you kind of like have a lot of time thinking by yourself. And I was like, all I really want to do is go to the dentist and get my car serviced. In the grand scheme of things, there are, you know, a couple people here that I think are way more deserving of $100,000. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's all I really have to do. And yes, it's shit that like so many young Australians can't do that thing. And so I just thought, you know, like when I got given the offer, I was like, hell yeah, I'd been saying like 10 bands and then like they said 15. I was like, all right, there's a week left, 15. Like, I was just like, I don't need this much money. I just don't need that much money. There are people that need that money more than I do on that show.
At the same time, I think what you've done is you've kind of put a light, a spotlight on what is a real cost of living crisis for a lot of young Australians. The fact that a lot of them are struggling with day-to-day stuff and you're like, I just need a bit of money to get this basic stuff done.
It's so shit that we can't even afford to go to the dentist, man. Like, I literally got people going to be like, ooh, this bitch is so gross. But I haven't gotten my teeth cleaned since I was, like, before my mum died. I've not had a teeth clean because that shit is, like, $400. Like, that, I haven't had in my adult life $400 to just spare. It's cooked that we can't even afford to go to the dentist in this country. We can't even afford to get mental health services in this country. And so, like, it was really sick to see that people were like, yeah, you're just this everyday person. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm broke as fuck.
Just to wrap it up, what's next for you, Abiola? Because, like, you're into music. I know you're on Triple J Unearthed as well. Yeah. Have you got any plans to release any new stuff? Yeah. Where do you see your life going now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting on some songs that I fucking love. Like, when I knew I got into the house, I was like, all right, I'm going to wait to drop these songs when I get out. Music is my passion in life. Like, I can't imagine doing anything else. And I'm just super gassed that now I have, you know, a bit more of a platform to share my music with, and especially, like, a lot of queer people, and I'm like, that's who I make music for, you know what I mean? Like, talk about lesbian shit so freely. I love that shit so much, man. So I'm keen to do that. Maybe I'll drop something before Christmas just for vibes. Yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much for catching up with us. Appreciate your time, Big
thank
Brother
you,
contestant
Dave.
Abiola. Appreciate you chatting with us.
Nah, thank you for having me. Appreciate you lots.
And yeah, the full chats with Abiola going up on the Hack podcast Thursday morning. We talk about a whole lot more in the extended chat. Things Abiola regrets from the house, what she thinks of the other housemates, who she's going to miss, who she's not going to miss. That's our long listen for the week. So go check it out on Thursday morning.